Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Ishopanishad course. We will today discuss Mantra 10. So we are discussing the third section of the Ishopanishad. In this third section, the topic is Vidya. How Vidya can lead us to the absolute truth. So in the previous verse mantra, we discussed how those who are in ignorance, those who are in avidya, those who worship avidya, go into darkness, and those who continue to worship avidya but imagine that they are in vidya, those who are having so-called knowledge, they go into deeper ignorance. So now this verse will say that in contrast to both these two people, that means both of them are basically in avidya, but they think that one of them thinks that we are in avidya. So as contrasted to this, avidya is vidya. And this mantra will say that by the cultivation of vidya and the cultivation of avidya, different results come about. So let us look at this mantra. Mantra 10. Anyadevahur vidyaya, anyadahura vidyaya, iti shushrumadhiranam, yenastat vichachakshire. So anyad means an other. Evahur, it is said, ahur is said, eva, certainly. Vidyaya, that by vidya, anya, some result comes. Anyad ahur avidyaya, it is said that by avidya, another result comes. One result comes by vidya, another by avidya. Iti shushruma, thus we have heard dhiranam, from the great souls. Yenastad vichachakshire, they have explained this to us. So here we know Swayambhu Manu is speaking this to Yajna Avatar as prayers of invocation, and he is saying that I have heard that by the cultivation of knowledge one result comes about, and by the cultivation of ignorance another result comes about. So let us see Prabhupada's translation. The wise have explained, that is dhiranam vichachakshire, that one result is derived with the culture of knowledge, anyadevahur vidyaya, and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations, anyadahura vidyaya. So basically the scriptures use different methods for conveying their message. One of the most potent methods that the scriptures use is contrasting. Contrasting means if you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this will happen. Now you decide what you want to do. So Krishna uses this repeatedly in the Bhagavad Gita also. And this makes things very crystal clear. Matchitta sarva durgani matprasada tarishyasi atha chetvam ahankara nashroshyasi vinangshyasi. In 18.58, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that if you become conscious of me, you'll pass over all obstacles by my grace. If, however, you act out of false ego, not hearing me, then you will be lost. Vinangshyasi. This contrast Krishna is doing. So, instructing by contrasting is a very clear and emphatic way of instructing. So this is what the Ishopanishad is also doing over here. It's contrasting vidya and avidya. Now in this mantra, avidya refers to, in general, the knowledge, the pursuit of sense gratification. And even knowledge that helps in the pursuit of sense gratification is called as avidya. And vidya refers to knowledge that helps us to develop in spiritual understanding, ultimately in Krishna consciousness. So let us look at Srila Prabhupada's purport. Vidya leads to desirable qualities. So that is the first two paragraphs. In fact, here Srila Prabhupada lists the 20 characteristics of knowledge that are given in the Bhagavad Gita 13.8-12. And then Srila Prabhupada, after describing this, contrasts this with the result of the cultivation of avidya as is seen in today's society. Avidya leads to undesirable qualities. And how those undesirable qualities are seen in today's society, Prabhupada explains. And then finally, in paragraph 6-9, he explains, only a dhira can teach vidya. That means, you may intellectually think, okay, I want vidya, I don't have avidya. But actually, from a practical point of view, it is only a person who is sober, who is not deluded by material things, can actually teach knowledge in a systematic way. That's why the word dhiranam comes over here. So Let's go back to the first section. Now here Srila Prabhupada lists the 20 characteristics given in the Bhagavad Gita as a list of long 18 statements. And actually seeing these 18 statements is quite insightful. So for example, the first quality over here is Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Shantirajivam. These are the first five qualities in 13.8 to 12 in the Bhagavad Gita, 13.8. Now let's see how Srila Prabhupada translates Amanitvam. So Amanitvam means humility or pridelessness. That's how it is there in the Bhagavad Gita. Now Srila Prabhupada translates it here as one should become a perfect gentleman and learn to give proper respect to others. That means how do I know that somebody is humble? Somebody say, oh Prabhu, I am so fallen, or Mataji, I am so fallen, I am good for nothing, I am this. Is that really humility? It may not be. It may be a self-centeredness masquerading as humility. So actual real humility is more directly expressed by how we respect others. Amanina manadena. So amani, how much we want respect for ourselves, that is very difficult for us to deal with, to get rid of, or even to curb. So, but we can surely start offering respects to others. And that is a positive way in which we can cultivate humility. Because when we are respecting others, we are giving them thought, attention and regard. And that essentially is humility. Actually, pride means we are so filled with ourselves that no one else matters. When we start respecting others, that is a positive, more Krishna conscious way of developing humility. Because we think about others and we give them thought, attention, time. And that way, we become less self-conscious. So humility is not so much thinking low about ourselves. It is more about thinking less about ourselves. You know, I am not such an important person in the world that I have to think about myself all the time. I'll think about others. When I think about others, then that naturally makes me less filled of myself. And that's how I become humble. So learn to give proper respect to others. Then Adambitvam, Srila Prabhupada translates as, one should not pose himself as a religionist simply for name and fame. So Dambha normally means, so Amanitvam refers to when I have good qualities, but still I don't demand respect. I don't expect respect. That is Amanitvam. Now Dambha means when I don't have qualities and still I ask for respect. That is Dambha. That means I don't know anything about Bhagavad Gita. I just know one or two verses and then I say, work is worship. So I pretend to have knowledge so that people will respect me. Oh, such a scholar he is. So that is Dambha. And Prabhupada says here, one should not pose himself religious simply for name and fame. So these are all characteristics of Vidya. So this is a remarkable and consistent correlation we will see that Srila Prabhupada brings about between Ishopanishad and Gita Upanishad. So the Bhagavad Gita is also known as Gita Upanishad. In fact, it is the essence of all the Bhagavad Gita. As the Gita Mahatmya says, Sarva Upanishado Gau Dugdha Gopal Nandana Partha Vatsa Sudhir Bhakta Dugdham Gita Amritam Mahat. So all the Upanishads are like a cow, and just as the essence of the cow is the milk, similarly the essence of all the Upanishads is Bhagavad Gita, the Gita Upanishad. And just as the milk comes out in the presence of a calf, Partha is the calf. And there is a milkman, a cowherd is required to bring out the milk. That is Krishna. And when the milk comes, it's not only the calf who takes it. Other people also take the milk. So like that, Sudhir. Sudhiranam is the word over here also in this verse. Sudhir is those who are sober. All those people will drink the nectar of the Gita. Now, this is Srila Prabhupada correlating Ishopanishad and Gita Upanishad. So, the Ishopanishad talks about Vidya and Srila Prabhupada explains Vidya based on Bhagavad Gita. This is called as Jnana. Etad Jnana Miti Proktam Ajnanam Yatanyatha 13.8 to 12. The 12 C and D says that this is knowledge and apart from this, whatever there may be, it is ignorance. Now, Ahimsa. Now, Srila Prabhupada gives an extraordinary translation of Ahimsa over here. Normally we say non-violence, but Srila Prabhupada gives a much deeper translation. One should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body, by the thoughts of his mind, or by his words. So this means that one, not only should one not commit violence to create agitation and anxiety to others, that is also a way of committing violence, and that also one should not do. And one should not be anxious, cause anxiety to others by our thoughts, words or actions. It's a very profound definition of Ahimsa. And then like that, Srila Prabhupada gives the list. So, Acharyopasanam, that is worship of the spiritual master. That is the sixth item. Srila Prabhupada translates that as, one should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to stage of spiritual realization. And one must submit himself as a spiritual master, render him service and ask relevant questions. So, what is this? This is a translation of 4.34 in the Bhagavad Gita. 4.34 is Tadviddhi Pranipatena Priprashnena Sevaya Upadekshanti Te Gyanam Gyanam Sattva Darshinaha. So how one should approach a spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada is giving that also. So actually when Srila Prabhupada gives us his purports, he gives us, like there are some cars. So the cars, they say maximum mileage per hour or per liter. Maximum mileage, it will go this much miles. So like that, Srila Prabhupada uses maximum mileage per purport. Now whatever purport he uses, he just gives maximum knowledge in it. Just Prabhupada translation is not just a cursory function which he has to do. This is English, this is Sanskrit, this is English, let me translate and put it. Prabhupada wants to convey the profound wisdom that is there in the Vedic literature. And knowing that, it has, that in wisdom has to be conveyed in a way that people can apply and benefit. Therefore, it is the Bhagavad Gita says Acharyopasanam. Now, Krishna was speaking at a time when people knew how to do Acharyopasana. Now, today people do not know. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says that, okay, you have to go to the spiritual master and search out a spiritual master. What kind of spiritual master? Not simply an Ashirvad Guru. Not simply a person who will smile and just raise the hands in blessing. No, a person who will lead one gradually to the stage of spiritual realization. So Prabhupada, that word Acharya Upasana, what kind of Acharya should we do Upasana of, he tells that. And then how Upasana is to be done, it is not just that we take Aarti plate and do Upasana. Upasana is done by submission, service and inquiry. SSI. So that's what submit, service and inquiry. This is how Srila Prabhupada uses maximum mileage in every purport that he uses. And then he goes on like this and gives the various items of knowledge he translates, and then Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. This is an important point. So, how does Prabhupada translate that? One should always remember that as long as he is a material body, he must face the miseries of repeated birth, old age, disease, and death. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries of the material body. Why is there no use? Because it is impossible. Everybody has to die. The best course is to find out the means by which one may regain his spiritual identity. So therefore, if we see, this is knowledge. What exactly is knowledge? Knowledge means to recognize that why I am suffering and what is the solution for my suffering. Why am I unhappy? Why am I dissatisfied? Why am I having problems? So, that when we understand, and we try to find solution to those problems. So, the scriptures tell us that the specific problems that we are facing may be many. I may have lost a job, I may have some relationship problems, my health may not be good right now, I may have some tension with my neighbor, or my laptop may not be working. We may have so many problems like that. But these are all specific problems which will come and go. But actually there are generic problems which are far bigger. And they are birth, old age, disease and death. And we recognize these problems and then we try to solve these problems. How do we solve it? By raising our consciousness. We are at the material level of consciousness where we suffer because of this. But when we understand I'm Atma, for the Atma there is no Jara, Vyadhi and Mrityu. And then there is no Punarjanma also. Srila Prabhupada goes further and gives translation of all the items. And then he gives the Vivitta Desha Sevittvam Aratir Jana Samsadi. That is the item. Now, interestingly, Srila Prabhupada groups the last four items as two, as a as a pair. So that means in the Bhagavad Gita list, 17 and 18 becomes 17 over here, and the Bhagavad Gita list 19 and 20 becomes 18th over here. So what is that? 17 and 18, Vivikta Desha Sevitvam Aratir Jana Samsadi. So Vivikta Desha Sevitvam, Prabhupada translated, one should develop a liking for residence in a secluded place with a quiet and calm and quiet atmosphere favorable for spiritual culture. So he's giving so much explanation. And Aratir Jana Samsadi. One should avoid congested places where non-devotees congregate. So by this, because when the non-devotees congregate, their collective presence creates a mass materialistic psychology, which can be quite draining for our consciousness. It can just sweep us off our feet and submerge us in materialism. That's why we avoid such places as much as possible. And then, Adhyatma Gyana Tattvam Tattva Gyana Arthadarsanam. These are 19, 20th items. The Prabhupada translates this as, one should become a scientist or philosopher and conduct research into spiritual knowledge. So, Adhyatma Gyana Tattvam. And then, Tattva Gyana Arthadarsanam. So, Tattva Gyana, one should conduct research into spiritual knowledge. Tattva Gyana Arthadarsanam. So why one should study spiritual knowledge? Why Adhyatma Gyana Tattvam? Because only spiritual knowledge is eternal. Recognizing that spiritual knowledge is permanent, whereas material knowledge ends with the death of the body. So again, it's interesting. Srila Prabhupada equates here scientist or philosopher. So how can those two be equated? Now today, philosophy is considered to be a branch of humanities. And sciences are considered a branch of sciences. And these two, there is, if we study academic circle, there's a fracture and a rupture between the two. And the scientists, those who are in sciences, they feel that we have made all the practical progress, we have made all the practical contributions, the technology, the help for humanity, that has come from us. The humanities have done nothing for us, and they look down on humanity. Whereas those who are in humanity, they say that ultimately, you know, science has just made things faster and better at a technological level. But as far as human values are concerned, no, science cannot do that. It is humanities only which talks about the things which make human beings human beings. So there is this conflict between science and philosophy. In fact, within science only, there was a whole, almost a decade of what was called a science wars. The wars between philosophers of science and scientists. Huge intellectual wars with books and papers being written and counter-written and counter-counter-written. But from Srila Prabhupada's perspective, ultimately, all knowledge is meant to take us towards spiritual truths. So, through philosophy, one can do research and come to spiritual knowledge. And through science, one can come to spiritual knowledge. So, philosophy, we can call it as metaphysics. Of course, philosophy has several branches. Metaphysics is one of them. And science, we can say, is physics. Science has, again, other branches. But to make the parallel clear over here. So, whether it is physics or metaphysics, ultimately, we have to understand spiritual knowledge. So physics can also lead us to spirituality. Metaphysics can also lead us to spirituality. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada emphasized, whatever one studies, ultimately come to spirituality. And spiritual knowledge is permanent, whereas material knowledge ends with the death of the body. So whatever we acquire is not going to go ahead with us. But spiritual knowledge will stay. Purvabhyasena tenaiva riyate yavashopi saha. Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, in response to Arjuna's question from 6.37 to 39, he describes in reply from 6.40 to 45 that whatever spiritual knowledge we acquire, so 40 to 43 decide that in the next life it will come back to you and you will be attracted to the spiritual principles almost helplessly, and thereby you will keep making spiritual advancement. Now, what are these? Now, we may say, if what is your education, if we ask today people? A person may say, okay, I'm a BE, I'm a BA, I'm a LLB, I'm a CA. So people may tell their degrees. But these degrees, they have their value, no doubt. But actually speaking, real knowledge is the development of character. So we will look now from a historical perspective here. Changing conceptions of knowledge. So, talking Prahlad Maharaj, Socrates and Francis Bacon. So Prahlad Maharaj says in the Bhagavatam, you know, when Hiranyakashipu asks, what is the best thing that you learnt? So he said, the best thing that I learned is devotional service to Lord Vishnu. So he says that Shranam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archunam Bandhanam Dasyam Sakhyam Atmanivedanam. He describes 9 items of devotional service, and then he says, Itipam Sarpita Vishnu Bhaktischena Navalakshana Kriyeta Bhagavatyadha Tanmanye Dhitamuttamam. This is the best education, I say. What is the best education? When these 9 elements, 9 activities, Itipam Sarpita Vishnu, when these are offered to Lord Vishnu, Bhaktischena Navalakshana, now Lakshana Bhakti, when they are offered to Lord Vishnu, then Kriyeta Bhagavatyadha. They increase the attraction to the Supreme Lord. And that is the best knowledge. So he says, what is the test of knowledge? Knowledge inspire. Knowledge comprises of doing the activities that engender, that foster devotion, that lead to devotion. So essentially, knowledge is devotion. So this is the transcendental understanding of knowledge. All the knowledge that we acquire is ultimately meant for increasing our attraction to the Supreme Lord. And the Bhagavatam says that if we don't increase our attraction to the Supreme Lord, whatever else we may do, it is actually simply a waste of time. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Now from the transcendental perspective is, knowledge is meant for increasing devotion. And that's what we see in the Bhagavad Gita also. And Krishna says, what happens to a person who is Buddha in 10.8, the first verse of the Chitushloki Bhagavad Gita, he says, Aham sarvasya prabhu matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. So one who understands that I am the source of everything material and spiritual, such a person becomes a Buddha, such a person becomes enlightened. Such a person becomes enlightened, what is the result? Bhava samanvitaha. The person wholeheartedly worships me. So knowledge leads to devotion. Now, from the transcendental perspective, we'll come down to one rung lower. That is sattvic perspective. Sattvic perspective is, knowledge is virtue. Knowledge is virtue means, Socrates said this, that knowledge should lead to the development of good qualities. And a person, the knowledge that is there, it should be something which is reflected in the character of the person. If that is not happening, then whatever the person has acquired is actually not of much use. The idea that knowledge is virtue is very much consistent with the Vedic understanding of sattva-guna knowledge. Sattvat sanjayate jnanam. Sattva-guna leads to knowledge. So it is, Krishna doesn't say, abhyasat sanjayate jnanam. It's not study alone that leads to knowledge. It's living in the mode of goodness. So when you live in goodness, then knowledge is cultivated, not just as information in the head, but as a transformation of character. So this is also what the Bhagavad Gita is talking about in 13.8-12. Here Krishna is not speaking from the transcendental perspective, he is speaking from the sattvic perspective, that knowledge should lead to the development of all these qualities. Now, as Kali Yuga progressed, let us look at Francis Bacon. He was a Renaissance thinker, post-Renaissance thinker in European history, one of the pioneers of empiricism. And his thoughts led to the development of science and technology especially. He envisioned technology being able to control and change the world in the future. So he said, knowledge is power. Now this is clearly rajasic. In rajoguna, the essence of a person's mental attitude is controllership. What the person wants to do is, how can I make everything happen according to my will? And the knowledge that I have is also for that purpose of making things happen according to my will. So technology is essentially about bending nature to human will. Knowledge is power. And today, when we have these high-tech gadgets, we press one button and an email goes somewhere else. We press one button and a phone call goes to somebody else. Now this is not necessarily bad. It is useful. It can be very useful even for devotional service. But the point is that when knowledge is reduced to this, this is one aspect of knowledge. When we acquire knowledge, we get some control. But if the whole conception of knowledge is shrunk down to the power that it gives one, and what kind of power? It is external power. It is not internal power. It is a technological power, as we discussed, does not enhance willpower. So knowledge is virtue means knowledge leads to willpower, and willpower leads to the person being able to use even technology properly. So knowledge is power means people are simply concerned with how much I can control. And if my knowledge has not led to good the development of good qualities, then the more power I have, that power will be used by my bad qualities for doing harm. So this is the current definition of knowledge. It is largely equated with power. So let's look at this further now. So the divorce of education from transformation leads to disruption. So education was originally associated with transformation. Education comes from educare. Educare means to bring out that which is within. What is within? Within we are souls. As souls, we are pure, we are godly. And that godliness is to be brought out through education. But when education just becomes something a matter of skills for external control, then there is a divorce of education from transformation. And then that leads to disruption. Disruption in that person's life, disruption in their in the social structure because of the way the person behaves. Why? Because that person is not having the self-mastery to be able to contribute properly. That's why we have in so much in today that in the United States, sometimes young children, young students, they take guns and they just go crazy and they shoot others. And some of the times it happens in elite universities also. And this is not just in the United States. It happens elsewhere also. So again, what is happening? According to modern definition of knowledge, or definition of success in education, there is just the capacity to have information. That is all that is considered important. A transformation is not considered very important. The value education is there in many universities nowadays, and it is good. Value education is important. But how are values to be developed? That is something which is not really very well understood. Is it that just by speaking about values, people will be able to develop values? Actually, there has to be a culture which supports and exalts those values. For example, if there is a value of respectfulness, let's say we should respect others. We should respect our elders, we should respect our equals also, as is appropriate. Now, we may talk about how we should respect others, but if the whole culture is of satire and sarcasm and sardonic speech, then that culture will more than counter whatever value education that is taught. So, values have to be coupled with a culture. Then they will lead to transformation. Today, the campus culture is such that very few values are cultivated in their culture, campus culture. That's why the divorce of education from transformation happens. And that's why there will be students who may be toppers in the universities, but then they are often prey to bad habits. Smoking, drinking, illicit sex. Now, even if we don't say from a spiritual perspective, but even from a material perspective, smoking, drinking, drug addictions, these are very harmful. So it leads to disruption. So knowledge is not for pooling, but pulling towards Krishna. Pooling means accumulating. So much information is there in the head. But there is no effective transformation that happens. In fact, I talked about knowledge and passion, but there's knowledge and ignorance is just irrelevant information. Irrelevant information means often there are talk shows and there are quizzes in which all sorts of irrelevant information is talked about. How many daughters does this particular film star have? And somebody who wins that quiz gets it right. That person may get 1 crore rupees for that. Well, actually, what is the use of such information? We don't disrespect that film star or his daughters. But the point is, does having this kind of information add any value to the person's life? So what has happened is, in especially today's society, irrelevant information is valued so much. So that information doesn't even give any power. So we have to create a context where some power will come. So we create this sort of quizzes. So that is actually the decline in the conceptions of knowledge that is there. So now, what you know is not as important as how you live. This is the Vedic understanding. What you know is not as important as how you live. Somebody may talk a lot about Krishna, but if that person is not actually devoted to Krishna, then what is the real value of that person's talking about Krishna? When Srila Prabhupada met George Harrison, George Harrison was a superstar at that time, superstar actually. And he had met several spiritual teachers before he met Srila Prabhupada. And they were all trying to influence him and attract him. And he said to Srila Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, how can one know a true spiritual teacher?" So now Prabhupada knew that George Harrison has read about Krishna and he's attracted to Krishna, he accepts Krishna as God. So he said, you know, a spiritual master is supposed to tell us about God. Now, if you want to know who is the actual spiritual master, you should see who is addicted to Krishna. Who is the most addicted to Krishna? Prabhupada used a very precise and profound word, addicted. Not just attached, not just attracted, not just devoted, but addicted. You know, in addiction, there is a helplessness which is instinctively pulled. So that addiction has a negative connotation normally, but when it is used in the context of Krishna, it brings out an image of irresistible attraction. So Prabhupada said, one who is attracted to Krishna. So what you know is not as important as how you live. You may say that you can talk a lot about Krishna, but in your life, are you attracted to Krishna? So, of course, all this is from the transcendental perspective, but even from the material perspective, if somebody says that, oh, we should be kind to animals, we should not, we should have ethical treatment of animals. You know, somebody, it sometimes happens that if some dog has a little bit of a not adequate long enough leash, then that less leash is seen as cruelty to the dog. And then a complaint is made against them. And when the people are complaining, at the same time, they are taking a breakfast which is flesh. So what is happening here? One is actually killing animals for one's tongue and then saying that animals' neck should not be tied so tightly. So this is a mismatch of the standards. This happens because there is a divorce between one's learning and one's living. So that divorce has to be bridged. And bridging that divorce happens only when one understands that learning is for living. Learning is not for earning. Learning is not just for earning. Now, Euclid is a pioneer of geometry. Euclidean geometry is considered foundational mathematics. So once when he was teaching geometry, one of his students asked, "Sir, what is the practical use of this? What are we going to do with this?" So then Euclid called one of his servants. He says, "Give this fellow a coin." And he said, he thinks that if he doesn't get a coin, then there is no, if he's not going to get a coin by this, then there is no use of studying this. So even he was able to point out that knowledge is not just for earning. Learning is not just for earning. Learning is for living. So today, this emphasis has been lost. Now let us see what are the consequences of this. So, avidya leads to undesirable qualities. That is what Srila Prabhupada talks in the remaining part of the purport. So, he says, the students today have no amanitvam. That means, they have no pridelessness. Students often like to make caricatures of their teachers and talk behind their back and make fun of them. And often, you know, the person who can crack the most satirical joke about others is considered to be the cleverest person. Now, this is a very perverse standard of cleverness. Actually, we live in Kali Yuga, which the scriptures describe to be Kaler Dosho Nidhe Rajan. It's an ocean of faults. So, finding faults in someone in Kali Yuga requires as much cleverness as finding water in an ocean. Now, water is everywhere. So, in an ocean. So, finding water does not require any cleverness at all. It is there everywhere. Actually, if we are in an ocean, and if you want to show our cleverness, let's see where the land is. Because that land will give us shelter from the ocean. Similarly, what requires cleverness, especially in Kali Yuga, is finding the good in others. So, unfortunately, we have this perverse standard that one who can, in the most creative way, speak destructively. That person is considered to be the cleverest person. Which is a very unfortunate standard. Na shaucham. such person. So no cleanliness means that Srila Prabhupada says that there is so much illicit sex that happens and nobody is trained in sense control at all. Actually, even 100-150 years ago, most education, whether it was in the West or the East, was based on a culture of self-mastery. It was understood that a student, unless the student wants to be, if the student wants to study seriously, the student has to control the senses. And one of the greatest agitation for the mind and senses is created by contact with the opposite sex. So there was instead of co-education, there was separate education. And Aristotle was once asked, when should we have sex? One of his students asked him. So Aristotle replied that whenever you want to be weaker than yourself. Whenever you want to be weaker than yourself. Why? Because although sexual feelings, lust, may create the illusion that I am a big hero temporarily, but it just sucks away our energy. And when it sucks away our energy, we cannot focus on things. So this, especially in the student phase, there is some amount of regulation and discipline that is required, which will lead to real education. Otherwise, not much education happens. Nasha ucham. So there is no cleanliness. And because of this lack of training, then there is so much illicit sex, and then abortion, and sexually transmitted diseases that happen. And then sometimes there are teen pregnancies. And then there are heartbreaks, and sometimes divorces happen. Sometimes suicides happen because of that. So the whole complex comes up when a student should be actually focusing the energy on development of character. So now, further Srila Prabhupada says that students grow up to be, when they are the student life, they don't need learn respectfulness, they don't learn cleanliness. And when they grow up, there is no ahimsa. So how there is no ahimsa? He talks about scientists developing weapons of mass destruction. So now, there are so many weapons of mass destruction that practically, we can kill all the life on the planet several times over. Of course, all human life will, or probably some small life forms like cockroaches will live, because they may not be affected by the kind of weapons that we humans use to kill each other. But the point is that developing weapons for causing destruction to others is really a tragic abuse of God-given intelligence. So in the before the Second World War, there were many scientists. They, when they saw the kind of weapons that were being developed and the kind of destruction that would be caused, they said, you know, we cannot use our intelligence to kill our fellow human beings. And they resigned. They said, but unfortunately, there are many other scientists. It was a lucrative industry developing weapons. And then others took up and started developing weapons. Now, of course, we have a catch-22 situation. You know, there are countries having hostility. And if one country develops weapons, the other country also has to develop weapons, at least for deterrent purposes. And where this deterrence will stop, that no one knows. So much of the national exchequer is diverted towards just making defense, spending on weapons. So when scientists create weapons of mass destruction, what is happening? They have intelligence, but that intelligence is unfortunately abused. Now, Albert Einstein is considered the greatest brain of the last century, and it was he who sent the letter to the US president, which led to the development of the Manhattan Project, which eventually led to the development of the atom bomb. And then when the atom bomb was dropped on Japan, and it just wiped out these two cities, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And then eventually, you know, later on when Einstein saw the extent of the destruction that had resulted by it, he said, sending that letter was the biggest mistake of my life. He said, my fear was that Hitler may have developed it, and that's why I wanted America to develop it beforehand. But actually, it is found that Hitler was not very close to developing it. Hitler, of course, had some sympathy for Indian culture, and he had sent some team of researchers to India to see if somebody could find out some ways in which the kind of weapons like Brahmastra and all those weapons, could somebody make it for him? He thought he could win the war that way. So he had the idea that he was an Aryan. he had misappropriated the title for himself. But the point which we are making over here is that it's symbolic that the biggest brain of the 20th century and his best invention or his best insight, that was E is equal to mc square, the interchangeability of mass and energy. So the biggest, the best brain's best insight led to the worst destruction of the last century. In fact, we could say the worst destruction in recent human memory in one single incident, one single attack. So what is happening? The culture of ahimsa is not there. The culture of violence has been cultivated. So now, when the scientists make these weapons, are they responsible? They may say that we are only using technology. Yes, they are only developing the technology. But it can fall into moral the hands of terrorists, and that will cause havoc. So nowadays, you know, there are chemical weapons of mass destruction, which there can be something as small as a cell phone. And if that explodes, that will just send inflammable gas in a distance of several kilometers around sometimes. And then one spark, and then everything will be up in flames. It can be devastating. So this is all tamasic, actually. This kind of terrible destructiveness that happens. So now we may say, what is the solution to this? The point is, there is an underlying misdirection of the values of life, misunderstanding of the purpose of life, that is breeding this kind of destructive use of the human intelligence. So then Srila Prabhupada talks about pseudo-religionists who have no adambhitvam. Adambhitvam means, as I said, not wanting to show off to others. So there are pseudo-religionists whose religion is only for showing off to others. They will do religious activities in a public way so that people can see how religious I am. So the goal is not to actually be devoted to God. The goal is actually to show people that I am devoted to God. And that they will do if it is politically correct. So 50 years ago, it was politically correct in India to show oneself to be religious. Now it has become politically incorrect to show that one is religious. So people may not show that also. So the idea is, adambhitvam means there is no emphasis on substance, there is only emphasis on appearance. So whatever way one can have a positive social image, one will have that without trying to cultivate the substance at all. So many times people say, when there is no serious education, then even the religious activities become just done for dambha. So for example, there are religious festivals where people make big pandals. So there are Ganesh festivals in Maharashtra, in various parts of India, especially Maharashtra. So then different people make the Ganesh images. And then it basically, the size of the Ganesh image becomes an expression of the size of the false ego of the patron. That means, you know, I made such a big Ganesh deity. And then somebody says, I made such a big Ganesh deity. And I made such a big Ganesh deity. And then actually we may make such big Ganesh deities and have them for a week or 10 days or fortnight. But then what happens? Oh, people just come over there and in front of their Ganesh deity there are film songs going on. So there is no genuine religious culture or spiritual understanding or illumination that happens. There is just the appearance without the substance. That is pseudo-religion. So pseudo-religion is extremely common. Even there are spiritual teachers who want to be spiritual masters of many, many disciples. So often they give initiation. In what way? They will say that, you know, the mercy of the Guru is causeless. So they will wash the feet of the Guru, and that charanamrut, whatever that water is, that is sprinkled. And whoever is fortunate enough to have a drop falling on there, that person is initiated. So now everybody wants to be initiated, because who doesn't want to have something for which nothing is the cost? So in this kind of initiation, there is no commitment made, there are no regulatory principles, there are no rules, and there is just the glamour that I am initiated from such a guru. So these people, it is a mutually self-serving and self-deluding arrangement. How is it self-serving? Self-serving because The guru wants to have the honor that I have many disciples. The disciples want to have the honor that I have a guru. So they are self-serving for each other and they are self-deluding, because the disciple is not going to make any spiritual advancement. And the guru is also actually not doing the function of a guru. Guru is not doing any service to anyone. So by the sort of initiation, even the guru is not going closer to God. So adambetvam. So there is just the dhamma, there is just show of religion that is there, without the substance. This leads to undesirable qualities, as you say, avidya. This is also a kind of avidya. Then Srila Prabhupada talks about nationalists. Now this can be a little sensitive. We have to understand Prabhupada's mood carefully. Srila Prabhupada takes this things from a global perspective or a universal perspective, and he says, in the vastness of the space, there are so many planets. And among those planets, our Earth, our Earth is just one, like a speck of dust floating in the sky. So now, on that Earth planet, we human beings live for a few decades. And while we are on this decade, for a few decades, we try to divide the Earth into countries. And we try to make boundaries. Now, this is my land, this is your land. No, this boundary should be here. No, this boundary should be there. Now, from the socio-political point of view, these are very serious issues. And people fight wars over these. But if you look at it from a transcendental perspective, it's quite absurd. We are here for such a short time. The land doesn't belong to us. And we are ultimately meant to leave this world. So while we are here, just keep fighting over how much is mine, how much is mine, then it's very short-sighted. So nationalism, seen from the transcendental perspective, is not very, very intelligent. So, Srila Prabhupada writes in a quote that, you know, because of bad system education, false system education, people are developing bad qualities like pride and nationalism. Now, nobody would consider nationalism to be a bad quality, isn't it? Now, of course, it all depends on words. So often people consider patriotism to be a good quality. The word patriotism has some good connotations. That person is a patriot. Oh, the person loves the country. And the person is a nationalist. Nationalist means that person is fanatical about one's nation. And he's like, my nation is the best. So, Srila Prabhupada is making it clear, he's talking about nationalism over here. He says, now, why is that a bad quality? Because that is ultimately based on ignorance. It is based on the understanding that I am the body and this body was born in this country. So, this country is special and I have a special bond with this country. Now, in the Vedic scriptures, there is aparadharma and there is paradharma. Aparadharma is mundane religion. So, attraction to one's family, one's dynasty, even one's country, it is not necessarily condemned. But from the transcendental perspective, it is not approved. Because that is also a form of illusion. In the Bhagavatam gives dharma from the transcendental perspective. So here, we are not condemning nationalism per se. The point here is, real vidya should raise us above these things. It should not just create nationalistic feelings within us, but it should take us beyond nationalistic feelings to transcendental feelings. So, in the Bhagavatam, there is a famous verse which says that, Yattirtha buddhi salilena kariche, janeshu abhigyeshu sa eva gokara. So, it describes that, Bhaum Ijyadhi, it describes a list of qualities, list of activities which are considered normally to be good. But these, if they are done without proper spiritual understanding, then they are saiva gokhara. They are like the behavior of a cow or an ass. So what are those qualities? It includes even religious activities within that. Yasyatma buddhi kunapetri dhatuke. So, to think that I am this body made up of various material elements, that is the first ignorance. And second is to think that those people who are related to us are my actual relatives. That is our second ignorance. Third is bhaumijyadi, to consider one's land of birth as a place of worship. And then lastly, to go to the holy place just to take a bath. So actually, if you look at the vision of the Bhagavatam, it is so penetrating, that it just goes to the substance. And it is not just rejecting material things like say material attachments based on bodily identification or family, it is rejecting not just nationalism, but it is rejecting even religion that is superficial, and is focusing on that is substance. What is substance? Janeshu abhikyeshu. We have to associate with people who are enlightened, and in their association, we make genuine spiritual advancement. If we go to the holy place just for taking a bath, then there are cows and donkeys also in the holy place, and they also take bath in the holy rivers. So how are we higher than them? So here the Bhagavatam is penetrating to substance, and Srila Prabhupada is giving us that advanced knowledge of the Bhagavatam. So if we are functioning in this world at the level of Paradharma, if we are living in a particular nation, we have to follow the laws of the nation, and we can offer respect whatever is expected of a citizen of a particular nation, but that shouldn't shrink our consciousness. That shouldn't fixate us in a bodily conception. We should be able to rise to a higher understanding of life. Then only we'll be able to make genuine spiritual advancement. So this is also to consider that I am Indian, I am American, I am Pakistani. These are all conceptions based on ignorance. Because ultimately we are none of these. We are souls who are transcendental. And in that sense, any kind of bodily misidentification is undesirable. But like we discussed in an earlier class, you know, we don't have to pinch people's false ego, and nor do we have to massage people's false ego. We have to pat it and help them move forward. So Srila Prabhupada would use it sometimes that you are all Indians, Bhagavad Gita is your culture, part of your cultural tradition, cultural legacy. Understand it and share it with the world. So like that, we have Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also saying this, Bharat Bhumi Te Hoile Manushya Janma Jar, Janma Sarthak Kari Kar Paropkar. So those who are born in India, they should take the opportunity to practice spiritual life and share its spiritual legacy with the world. So now, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying this, what is the implication over there? The implication is not some nationalistic, patriotic sentiment. The idea is that Bharat Bhumi is considered to be Punya Bhumi. The souls who get birth in Bharat Bhumi are those souls who have pious and spiritual credits. Srila Prabhupada says that actually spiritual substance flows in the body of Indians. That means that Indians have actually a lot of spiritual inclinations deep within them. So they can practice spirituality and share spirituality. So it is a focus not on India, but focus on spirituality that is latent within India and Indians, and the message or a call to bring out that spirituality. So that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is focusing on. So in this way, we can actually recognize that real knowledge should take us towards the development of transcendental qualities. And how will this happen? When first of all, it all begins by hearing from Adhira. So Adhira, a sober person, is a person who is not deluded by material things. And Srila Prabhupada talks about Adhira in the last section of this purport. And therein he describes, Adhira realizes that, so Prabhupada first defines Dhira as, Adhira is one who is not disturbed by material illusion. And then, no one can be undisturbed unless he is perfectly spiritually realized, at which time one neither hankers nor laments for anything. So Prabhupada is correlating Dhira with 18.54 in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahmabhuta Prasannatma na Shochati na Kangshati. The person neither hankers nor laments. And now this is a very significant statement that Prabhupada makes. Adhira realizes that the material body and mind he has acquired by chance through material association are but foreign elements. Now, the word by chance is very significant over here. Now, the first lesson in spiritual life is that nothing happens by chance. Everything happens by plan. Everything happens by the will of God. So then why is Srila Prabhupada saying that we acquire the material body and mind by chance? So here, by chance is not meant to indicate that there is no plan or there is no order, there is no pattern according to which we get the body. By chance is used, is spoken to convey that actually there is no intrinsic connection between the soul and the body-mind setup. The soul, depending on the kind of culture that was exposed to, the kind of psychology that was created by that, accordingly the soul gets a particular mentality, and then accordingly gets a particular body. So the emphasis of the by chance over here is that there is no intrinsic connection between the soul and the body. They are essentially different, and because of some circumstances they have come together. So the circumstances are not disorderly or chaotic. There are certain principles underlying it. But the point is that I have nothing to do with my body actually. It is just something which I have acquired by my past karma. And I may have had so many bodies like this in the past. And I may have so many bodies in the future if I don't purify myself and get liberated. So there is essentially no connection between me and my body. And that is emphasized by the term by chance. So they are but foreign elements. We have got nothing to do with them. And therefore, he simply makes the best use of a bad bargain. So why is the body a bad bargain? Because it brings so much suffering. And it also causes limitation. No, it brings suffering in terms of old age, disease, death, and before that, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhivik klesh also come to us. And then, along with that, even if we want to do good, even if we want to serve Krishna, the body holds us down. The body limits us physically. And the body distracts us psychologically. We want to chant, but then after some time our throat gets tired. We want to do some service, our body gets tired. Then even if we want to, even if we have bodily energy and strength of voice, still our mind is distracted. So the body pulls us down and distracts us in the service of Krishna. That's why they are bad bargains. But the bad bargain, we have already got it. So what do? Make the best use of a bad bargain. So we use it to whatever capacity we can, and by that we purify ourselves. So Pajla Prabhupada concludes by talking about the Dhira must come in disciplic succession, and Dhira must learn from Avidya, and Adhira cannot be an instructive leader. So Adhira means one who has not undergone the training of Adhira. So sometimes politicians may also quote some Bhagavad Gita verse. Some politicians may also appear to be learned. But actually, Prabhupada says they are simply busy seeing to their own remuneration in dollars and cents. How then they can lead the mass of people to the right path of self-realization? So actually, as long as one is self-centered, self-obsessed, one cannot really think of the good of others. So the politicians are simply concerned, how can I earn more and more and more? There may be a few politicians who may be actually concerned for society, but majority of them are simply concerned with their own aggrandizement. And because of that, they cannot do any good to others. So even if they speak some pious sounding words, they are just superficial. They cannot act as dhiras. So every field has its speciality and every field has its authority. So the spiritual teachers, who can be spiritual teachers? Those who have got spiritual realization. And the spiritual realization is the characteristic of a dhira. And it is when we take knowledge from them, then the vidya will lead to the development of good qualities. So to summarize, we started discussion by talking about how in this verse, avidya refers to anything that fosters sense gratification. It will be ignorance or it will be knowledge. And vidya refers to anything that fosters spiritual advancement, ultimately Krishna consciousness. And these two lead to different results. That's the verse. And Srila Prabhupada first talks about vidya. And he correlated that with the 20 elements of the Bhagavad Gita. And we talked about how Srila Prabhupada gives maximum mileage in his purports, right, through every rendition that he does. And we discuss the changing conceptions of knowledge. So knowledge is devotion, Prahlad Maharaj says. Knowledge is virtue, Socrates says. So knowledge, devotion is transcendent. Knowledge is virtue, is goodness. And knowledge is power, says Francis Bacon. That is rajasic. And today, knowledge is just irrelevant information. So that is actually tamasic. So the divorce of education from transformation leads to disruption. There is disruption because students have no training, and students grow up to be cannot do, no, they don't have moral, can't become moral responsible citizens. And we look at how there is violence, there is uncleanliness, there is wastefulness, and there is destructiveness that comes about. And we discuss about how the Bhagavatam goes to the substance of things, and it things which are considered to be good, like love for one's country, love for one's family, and inclination to do religious rituals. Bhagavatam says even those, if they're not done properly, with proper spiritual knowledge, they are also at the level of animalism itself. And this way the Bhagavatam takes us to the essence. The essence is that we have to purify ourselves and realize ourselves as servants of Krishna. And this happens only when we learn spiritual knowledge from Adhira. Thank you very much. Shri Isho Upanishad ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bhagavatam.